You can also find us on Tumblr at peopleofcolor.tumblr.com.
We're organizing against what we term genocide.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Information is the best way to protect your health. Plan B, an emergency contraceptive, is now available over-the-counter, without a prescription or a doctor's appointment, for women 17 years and older. If you have had unprotected sex or have been sexually assaulted, consider Plan B to prevent an unwanted pregnancy. You have a legal right to get Plan B without a doctor's prescription. For more information, call your local Indian Health Service. If your local IHS does not carry Plan B, request that they do. Contact your local tribal health board and let them know about Plan B so they can make sure IHS provides it. For more information, call 605-487-7072. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Or confused, get information or a pamphlet at most pharmacies or a health clinic. If you need help, see a doctor.
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying? For Men in Hip Hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable, you know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about, it shouldn't be supported, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her, and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
Doing too much. You don't do a dog like that. You didn't have to shoot him 8 times. If he was doing something to you and you was trying to stop him, where did the police shoot you? In the leg. You just shout out through my
back. I just want to say, you know, can we all get along? Can we get along? Can we stop making it horrible for the older people and the kids?
May the Lord protect me as I travel along the way. Jesus. All around me every day.
If you know what it's like to feel helpless, you know what stress is. We careless, cause they ain't hearing us deafness. So many restless, parents losing their precious. Black kid and innocent in the street, laid out breathless. This the land of the free, I'm amazed. Nothing ever changes, repeating the same phase. Just know without blacks, there wouldn't be no USA celebrating Independence Day, but we still treated like slaves. Let's not pretend that reality seems just a normality. Fatalities, no justice for blacks against police brutality. Don't get mad at me, I'm just a messenger. Don't shoot, and we still can't get justice. Even if we have proof, it's no secret. Blacks a minority and get treated as such. Wonder why we don't respect authority. Like how much is enough? As a little girl, thought life was sweet, ice creams and swirls. Sorry for being black in this white man's world, I'm wrong.
This guy right here is forcibly trying to somebody up for breaking up a fight.
Oscar Grant could be my cousin, Eric Garner could have been my daddy. Case closed, end of discussion, Sean Bell, John Crawford, Trayvon Ezell, and Jordan could have all been my family. You sleep, come down to snoring. An unarmed young black male gapping don't justify the fact police just trigger happy. We supposed to feel protected. We feel with anger, get on the internet, search for pictures, paint them as thugs and gangsters. Chances are never given, it's getting harder to strive. For greatness seems just a crime to be black and alive. It's hard to abide by the rules we forever deny. Blindly in the blind system ain't set up for us to survive. Will this revolution be televised? Probably not, since we at war with ourselves. So much black on black crime. Do we not have feelings? They quick to say white mass murderers got a mental illness, but let a black male walk the wrong way, look suspicious on a mission, even talk the wrong way. He dead, he should have laid low. Bet he don't get justice. The jury could say whatever God got the last say so.
They provoke us and choke us, or they gun us down. Hope we make it to better times in this white man's world being brown.
Once again, police beating up on people.
Back up.
Right here.
Back up and get on that step.
Okay.
Back up.
All he did was break up a fight. And this is what happens for breaking up a fight. This shit is crazy.
This is Malachi Daniels talking to you from New York City. You're listening to Aboriginal News. Angry Indian Radio, a place where you can come to hear what's really critical and discussed about African people, about indigenous people, what is going on globally, where you can come and get real information. This is not CNN. This is not even RT or STV. This is Aboriginal News. Come and get it.
Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid from The Horn. Head on RadioNetwork.com, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Head on RadioNetwork.com, an internet-based conversation radio experiment. Available most easily at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a Listen Live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio, a nice app for your mobile smartphone, or Tuner Internet Radio, or Dar.fm, or Stitcher Radio, Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? Head on RadioNetwork.com.
And one morning, and see, this the reason the story is difficult to tell is because I just, for the life of me, can't make it work in reality. I can't get my head around mommy or daddy or, you know, you get up, you get Precious Lumpkin up, and you say, come on, baby, we're going to have us some quality time. We're going down to the gun range to learn how to protect freedom. Now, bear in mind, earlier today, I was running up to the Wiggling Pig for supplies. And driving along, I noticed, what was probably an 8-9-year-old kid walking out behind his house with a .22 rifle in his hand. I hate to say it, but that's kind of the culture around here, .22 rifle. And I desperately want to believe that daddy or grandpa or maybe even mama have long since taught the little fella how to safely use the 22. And I mean, that's a hope against hope, right? I hope I don't get up in the morning and read some local news alert. 9-year-old shoots 11-year-old with 22 rifle. But this is not that. This is getting your 9-year-old daughter up in the morning and saying, come on, we're going to go to the gun range and do some freedom protecting, and you're going to learn how to protect freedom with a sure enough automatic weapon. Because that's what happened. Charles Vaca, 39 years old, was standing next to a young girl this past Monday morning, teaching her how to shoot an Uzi. Not a little tin can plinker 22, not to downplay the potentially deadly effects of a 22, but an Uzi. I mean, a 22 has a little bit of recoil to it. But what happened with the little girl, the little 9-year-old girl who was being taught to use the Uzi? Well, she wasn't strong enough to hold the firearm down vis-a-vis the recoil after the burst. So, and it flies up and it blows away Charles Vaca, the 39-year-old firearms instructor. I mean, kills him. Wolverines! Can you sort that out? Because I can't. I can't. It happened on Monday morning. So Sunday night, Mama and Daddy are sitting around. Well, what should we do Monday? Well, let's take baby to the gun range. In an effort to create some sort of existential cushion between what happened and that, Mojave County Sheriff Jim McCabe told the Las Vegas Review-Journal that the girl had safely fired the gun many times when it was set in the single-shot mode. Blam! 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 But then the gun was put into fully automatic mode, and that's when it recoiled and fired off multiple rounds. Notice that it recoiled and fired off multiple rounds, not the 9-year-old girl into whose hands it had been placed. And I don't want to appear to be sexist or stereotyping roles or anything. But God Almighty, couldn't they have taken her out to ride a horse? Or being as how it's Arizona and a freaking desert, maybe a trip to the swimming pool. I'm utterly divorced from the reality of this culture. You tell me if you know anything about gun goober culture. Is there an America where a little 9-year-old girl on Sunday night says, Daddy, would you take me to shoot the Uzi again tomorrow morning? I like that. They were on vacation. The family. From New Jersey. And what? They're in the hotel and, you know, there's that shelf there of with all the pamphlets. See the Grand Canyon. See the glories of Vegas. Come shoot an Uzi. Hey, let's do that one. I was kind of hoping for the water slide. Oh, shut up. You're no fun. We're going to go shoot the Uzi. This all took place in an area called Last Stop, Arizona. And the name of the shooting range is Burgers and Bullets. No, really. Well, that just sounds kid-friendly, doesn't it? But this is America. This is a gunned-up, paranoid, freaked-out America where you can't go to the Rippy Mart without having to get a can of Copenhagen without strapping on, you know, your 40 millimeter. Or your 40 caliber. Jesus, a 40 millimeter would be hard to carry around, wouldn't it? Or maybe your 9 millimeter. And of course, this is just an unfortunate accident. It has nothing to do with the fact that we got guns. And freedom protectors and Gadsden flag carriers and cranky old unreconstructed land grabbing Mormon settlers in Bunkerville. And his buddies with the scopes and the crosshairs that they put on the heads of Bureau of Land Management agents. And teenagers who get shot down in the street in Missouri. And who are then described by right-wingers as, he wasn't an unarmed man. He wasn't an unarmed teenager. He was huge. His size alone was enough to make him dangerous. No, really. Really. Or maybe the police in Georgia. Police in Georgia who tasered Gregory Towns after he was already in handcuffs. They used the taser 13 times as a cattle prod because he couldn't walk. And then Gregory Towns died. That was April 11th. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, bro, what's going on?
Hey, Angry, what's happening?
Well, I don't know. Burgers and bullets, man. Burgers and bullets. You know?
Doesn't that just send you screaming out into the yard?
Burgers and fucking bullets. It's like, you know, how...
See? Okay, you know, I'm not alone.
No, it's so American, I can't believe it. It's just like when that couple, that crazy clown couple, like I told you, I was, you know, I was writing something and then Missouri happened and then everything else has been happening, but it all ends up tying back into it. You know, you had Walmart. That's where that crazy clown couple in Las Vegas went nuts, shot two police officers. Shot right. All these people and then shot themselves, you know, like JT Reddy kills his family, then kills himself. It seems that America, in terms of, you know, America, first off, is not the United States, but in terms of people living in the United States and Canada, for that matter, because since they've had Harper, they've been going just as insane. You know, when he was asked about the missing indigenous women up in his part of, this continent, his answer was, well, yeah, there's a lot of indigenous women missing, but there's a whole lot that aren't missing either.
Oh, the power of the logic.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was Bush light, but now he seems to be Bush full on. So it's the same thing. But, you know, the fact that this is the second case that I've heard of a child who was handling a field grade weapon at a gun show, or in this case, a gun range. In the first case, the child killed himself. The recoil, he took his own head off. In this case, it was the instructor. But why is a child on vacation handling an Israeli-made weapon that has only one use? You cannot hunt with an Uzi.
Nope.
It only has one purpose. Why would you want to give this to your child?
See, that's where I can't get to, Angry. You've come all the way from New Jersey to Arizona on vacation. because I guess the Jersey Shore is just boring or whatever, but you've gone to the middle of the desert from New Jersey on vacation. I mean, there's lots of stuff to do, right? I mean, never having been to Arizona, but I'm assuming there's a lot of really neat kind of Arizona kind of stuff to do.
Yeah, you can watch the immigrants that they catch being marched down the road in pink jumpsuits. You can look at the mural that they tried to whiten, you know, and then they had to revert it back to the brown faces that it originally was. Yeah, that's more than likely why they went to Arizona. You know, Joe Arpaio, Steven Seagal is now a police officer there because he can't be a police officer in Louisiana. And I'm sorry I interrupted, but yeah, I'm just saying.
No, you didn't. You didn't interrupt anything.
You know.
I mean, that's like I got a note in from our buddy, Michael, otherwise known as Kid A when he's in the chat room. Subject line, angry as it fired. Michael writes, just checking. Did I hear that reportage correctly? Did you say it fired? Yeah, because that's what the article said. Cause Michael says, I've been told guns don't kill people. 9-year-old girls kill people. I mean, can you imagine how do you, that was Monday. You know what? The 9-year-old little girl is not okay.
She can't be. That's impossible. She's going to live with this for the rest of her life.
When is she going to be okay?
Well, I don't know. See, if she's growing up in a society that tells her, well, the real fault was, you know, the instructor just gave you the wrong weapon. You know, it's not your fault. It's just one of these gun things.
Angry. Wait. Because the Mojave County Sheriff already gave the excuse. She had already successfully fired, because I guess this is how it works at Burgers and Bullets. She had already successfully fired the Uzi in single shot mode.
Yeah, so that just means she automatically knows what to do when it's in what? 3-round, full auto, whatever it is. Yeah, you know, again, what's the point? I mean, you have Israelis that talk the same sort of nonsense. That, you know, they need to, you know, be able to put them on the field as commandos as early as 10 because, you know, the Palestinians train theirs as early as 10 and then they'll point to the Intifada as proof that, you know, everybody's just on war mode all the time. And, I mean, there's a lot of things that we can say about this and we can get really philosophical about it and we can point to a lot of historical, reasons.
I mean, can we speculate? And this is just rank rotten speculation. But okay, so let's presume that it is mommy and daddy and daughter. Please, just based on probably statistical likelihoods, you want to take a run at the ethnicity here?
In whose ethnicity?
The family's ethnicity. From New Jersey, that went to Arizona to Bullets and Burgers and Bullets.
You mean they weren't Anglo-Saxon Caucasians like Willard Romney, Bishop Romney?
No, I'm guessing they are. And so, having speculated upon that, let us continue to speculate.
I mean, it's right on like crime and violence, but hey.
Yeah. Okay. So, whose idea? And you get a pick. You know, there's three choices here: mommy, daddy, 9-year-old little girl. Mm-hmm. Whose idea was going to Bullets, Bombs, Burgers, and Bullets? See, I mean, I can't even let that live in my brain. Whose idea was it to go to Burgers and Bullets on vacation? Mommy, A. B. Daddy, C. 9-year-old little girl.
There's no D?
No D, sorry. I mean, I guess there could be all of the above, but somebody has to have the idea first, right, Angry?
Well, yeah, but it would be stereotypical to say it would be the father. I haven't really read too much deeply into this because I was disgusted after I read, you know, like the first three lines. What was it? The mother? I wouldn't be surprised.
No, that's what I said. This is just rank speculation. But I mean, I'm utterly separate from this culture. That's the thing. I don't understand that's the point of this. I don't understand my country anymore.
So
maybe it was mama.
Well, it could have been, but actually you do. I mean, you have the professor that comes on, Head On Radio Network, for those of you who are piping in and don't know what you're listening to. And I do hope you contribute to this. There's a professor that comes on and explains American history pretty much from the ground up. And if you really look into the literature at the time, the popular, media, you know, artwork, pulp novels, you know, just newspaper articles, early radio, the telegraph. You have to be careful because the Indians are coming. The blacks are going to revolt, whether they're slaves or whether they're free. You can't trust anybody. The French are coming. There's always somebody to be fearful of. You're stealing, but, you know, the Mexicans are coming for what you have, even though you're actually siphoning from them. You know, there's always been this. So, really, we shouldn't be surprised about any of this. We shouldn't be surprised about what happened in Ferguson. And we shouldn't be surprised that we've gotten to the point in the 21st century, after Hitler, all right, after Mussolini, after Franco, that, you know, to the point where we have nine-year-olds who are going on vacation, with their parents' permission, obviously, to take their child to a range where she accidentally kills the instructor because, you know, she was able to handle single shot and now it's on full auto or whatever the hell it was set to. And, you know, she couldn't handle the recoil and she ended up taking off this guy's noggin. And we're just supposed to look at this as rational people and say to ourselves that, you know, we're still on top. You know, because we've always been on top, basically because we've always said so. And we never discussed how we had to do this and the war psychology that you have to have in order for this to be. To me, if you have a white family that's coming from New Jersey, which is already conservative, this is the land of Chris Christie, okay? If you have somebody coming from New Jersey, goes to Arizona, they're looking for even more conservatism. I know conservatives who have moved to Arizona, including some black people. They got their concealed weapon permits, they're all ex-military, they marry, you know, I'm just saying this, they're black fellas, they marry white women, and, you know, they moved to Arizona because they feel at this point they were untouchable, and now they told them, like, yeah, I'm going to apply for the police department down here, I'm going to apply for this. This is a mentality. And we have movies to talk violence all the time. All they do is show violence. We have games like this. The music is like this. And then we ask ourselves stupid questions. And then we look at Christian history. And we look at the Bible itself, which is one of the most genocidal and violent books in the English language, right? Or in any language. And we keep saying to ourselves, oh, there's no violence here. You know, I mean, what? Israel just got violent? Israel was violent when it was founded. I mean, the Canaanites were there. This isn't me. This is in the Bible. They wiped out two people on the way over there. And they say that this is theirs. And, you know, they had to fight for this because the Romans came in. And then, you know, now they're blaming Islam for everything. And they're blaming Muslims in particular as an ethnic race for everything.
Well, I mean, yeah, but back up. I mean, historically, let's see. We've got, and this is just stuff that's accounted for in the Old Testament. You've got the Assyrians. You've got the Babylonians. You've got the Egyptians. Then you're fresh out of Old Testament. Well, no. If you count Maccabees, you've got the Hellenistic Greeks.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you're fresh out of Bible and you got to move over to the New Testament and you got the Romans.
Mm-hmm. Which is a European power, right?
Well, so was the Greeks.
Yeah. Well, depending on where you draw the line on Europe, that's still an argument in Europe. Because when they started having the street riots, for the austerity, this is before the Golden Dawn started killing people, and you notice that the American press hasn't said anything about that.
Yeah, crickets.
Yeah, the Golden Dawn has an office in New York City. You know, I just want you to know that. They were allowed to do that after Breivik. They were allowed to do that. That was one of the groups that he was connected to, and they were allowed to do that. So, you know, when they were rioting, not, you know, for the austerity and not, you know, the racism violence, but when they started marching for austerity, Fox News was questioning whether or not they were European. Were they really members of the EU fully? They're kind of close to Turkey, aren't they? Isn't Cyprus over there?
This was
the language that they were using. And even the white supremacists in the United States, because I've sent you this article before, they do not believe that the leader of the Golden Dawn is white enough. They think he's too Semitic, that he's too dark, he's too Arab to really be a white man. You know, they support his movement, but they don't like him.
Oh, I got to share something with you. This just popped up in the chat room. Our friend Carol Baker is in there this evening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was great last night, by the way. Thank you, Carol, for coming on. I appreciate
it. She was awesome. She just typed into the chat room, a young black man in Ferguson told me a joke. How many cops does it take to change a light bulb? Answer, none. They just beat the room for being black. Mm. It ain't funny, but it is.
Yeah, but look at where it came from. You know, the Polish jokes, right?
And well, but I mean, that's, you know, that's a joke being told in that community.
Yeah, no, but what I'm getting to here is the social political thing that, you know, those jokes, you know, on Polish stupidity, you don't really hear them too much anymore. And a lot of people think that, oh, well, we just grew out of it. No, that's not true.
No, they got transposed.
They got transposed in a lot of ways. But one of the other things is a lot of Polish people eventually, at least within their communities, and I'm speaking of Pennsylvania because that's what I know best, became police officers, became lawyers, became part of the establishment. You weren't allowed to say those jokes anymore. You understand what I'm saying? They used to say the same thing about Italians when I was a kid. You know, that, you know, every Italian was in the mafia, and it was hard for a lot of Italians to get jobs outside of.
Well, I mean, let's remember that whether it be the Irish or the Italians, or, you know, pick out your poor and downtrodden European immigrant group. At the time, whenever the wave of that immigration happened in the United States, they weren't white folks.
Yeah, not according to the United States government. No, there was restrictions.
And according to the communities into which they moved.
Into which they moved. Yeah, but I'm just saying, as far as Ellis Island goes,
Irish need not apply.
As Ellis Island goes, Italians, you know, they had a hard time getting in here. Anyone that they deemed swarthy was stopped. You know, and checked extra for lice and for anarchism. You know, they wanted to know their politics before they came in. There were limits on Chinese, Russians, Filipinos. Yeah, you know, I mean, all of these prejudices, well, Eastern Europeans mostly in terms of Europeans, you know, all of these prejudices come from, again, the same thing. Western Europe historically has always exploited Eastern Europe. So, you know, you always have to worry about them coming back for what's theirs, right? For what was taken from them. You know, people have historically used the Scots-Irish as cannon fodder to move into territories. And then as soon as the, you know, Scots-Irish start asking for what's theirs, then they start, you know, going after the Scots-Irish, right? You know, so you're good as long as you stay in the mines. Cause I heard somebody mention the kingfish not too long ago.
Yep.
And, you know, you're good enough if you stay within your place. And, you know, I mean, people can look at Jex Foxworthy and hee-haw, and we've joked about that on the show. But the thing is, these are real ethnic barriers. And because the United States has this really fluctuating and arbitrary sense of racism, you know, the one drop rule affects me. Even though when I'm around native people, they accept me, right? And I can be confused for this, that, and the other. But because of the one drop rule, it is illegal for me technically to say that I'm anything else. You know, which is not something that the average white person necessarily has to think about. You know, whereas, yeah. Go ahead.
No, and as long as the hillbillies stay in the mines, we're useful.
Yeah, as long as you do that. But then once
the problem in Appalachia, Angry, is that we're fresh out of mines to go into. So what are they going to do with us next? I mean, there is a reason that on a per capita percentage or on a statistically expressed basis, Central Appalachia has given more in terms of lives to every war in the United States has ever waged than any other region in the country. Because, one, we're cranky, and two, you know, hell, it beats getting gassed or blown up in a hole.
Yeah, but the bottom line comes down to you come from a community, socially, on the social register, yeah, at least in this country, right, that is on the bottom, at least for white folks. You know? You're on the bottom. So, you know, the further you are down in that pecking order, nobody really gives a damn, you know.
Let's remember that, and we could go, you know, I think Carol mentioned last night, Chicago 1968. Mm-hmm. And of course there's Watts.
Well, look at that. Chicago 7 or Chicago 8.
Yeah. What I was getting at is, Detroit, Oakland, you know, places where the force of government has come down, with a boot on expressions of civil discontent. Well, let's remember 1921 is the only time that the United States has mobilized its air force to bomb its own citizens.
Well, you're going to have to refresh me on that one.
That's the Battle of Blair Mountain when discontent coal miners decided
to
buy
planes,
though.
Oh, hell yeah. Billy Mitchell
had his brand new theory of aerial superiority.
Did you say Billy Mitchell?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the name I know. All right.
Yeah, he had his brand new theory of aerial superiority, and he was allowed to test it out on the hillbillies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
In fact, the Blair Mountain folks, the people trying to preserve it from mountaintop removal, just won a case in the federal circuit court saying that Blair Mountain should be listed, should be listed on the National Register of Historic Places, or that it should at least be remanded for listing, because they originally got it listed. You know, the archaeological work had been done. The trenches can still be found. There's still all kinds of bullets and a few firearms have been recovered. These were World War I veterans who had come home, gone back into the mines, and been brutally repressed after, you know, fighting the war to end all wars and defending freedom. They'd come back home to be brutally repressed by the coal companies. So they were marching toward Logan, and they wound up setting up entrenchments, earthworks, the works on Blair Mountain. And along came a coal company and said, you know what we'd like to do? We would like to blow that mountain the hell up. And a bunch of people got kind of uppity about that and said, no. And so they started a move to get the place listed on the National Register of Historic Places and succeeded in getting it done. And then Joe Manchin stepped in and got it unlisted by virtue of the use of petition signatures from dead people.
Oh, he did a Kennedy versus Nixon?
Dead. There were objections to the listing filed by property owners who were dead.
Uh huh. Well, that's Joe Manchin. So I mean, you know what, you know.
But anyway, that's the one time, you know, when we talk about the universe of citizen repression, you kind of got to go to Blair Mountain too.
Well, I wasn't aware of that. I was aware that the military and private security, as they put it back then, basically whatever thugs the coal companies would hire and the rail companies would hire, that usually became, you know, put professional police officers after these things happened, if they were successful. I wasn't particularly aware of that.
Well, there's an awesome photograph of 1921 in Charleston, West Virginia, on the south side of the Kanawha River, and just entire squadrons of biplane aircraft parked ready to go and take off and go and bomb the miners.
Well, as I said, you know, this isn't new. You know, these things have happened, and that was the state, you know. But then in terms of, say, you know, natives, sometimes it was the army. Sometimes it was just a group of opportunistic farmers. Sometimes they were bounty hunters that went, you know, to, you know, get proof of kill, you know, in terms of, you know, however many natives they could get. And, you know, they got paid for however many scalps and so on. I mean, there are records of this. This isn't in dispute. People dispute it, but they're full of it. But when you look at, you know, anarchism, how, you know, the Palmer raids went down. You know, I mean, there are many, many stories. How the 1919 strike. I mean, you know, they're striking right now. Well, not striking, but they're blocking the boats that are coming from Israel in the ports of Tacoma and San Francisco. And they've been pretty successful at it. But there was a strike like that in 1919.
Not a lot of news out there on it, though, is there?
No. You have to go to the alternative news or the European news, or you don't find out anything. See, on the other hand, though, you have websites that are complete nonsense, like DebbieSlussell.com.
Oh, dear God, you sent me that link, and I just about flew through the roof.
Yeah, why don't you go through and explain that to people?
Give us a backgrounder on Debbie Schlussel.
She's like Pam Geller. She's just one of these, she's a blogger, if you still want to use that term. She obviously gets professional work. But she's like the Ann Coulter of the American Zionist lobby.
She is an Islamophobe through the roof.
Through the roof. I mean, she's been tying Ferguson into the Palestinian struggle ever since it was reported that the tear gas canisters are coming from the same firm. It's being used in both Gaza and in Ferguson, Missouri. So she's been trying to connect, you know, black people who happen to practice Islam to this, you know, to the struggle. It's ridiculous. But
well,
she's
this
really
this no, this headline made me fit, to scream. Hamas group, we Muslims are behind Ferguson race riots. Help us mobilize Michael Brown movement.
Which is not what they said. And, you know, Hamas had nothing to do with this. And what she's talking about is the Council on American Islamic Relations, who they got themselves together to basically work against the idea that all Muslims are violent. You know, they're trying to protect their own community. I mean, they are more likely
I've known for years. I've met Ibrahim Hooper. He's a nice guy. It's a civil rights advocacy group.
Exactly. I mean, I've never found anything untoward about them, and I've looked, and you know, there's just nothing there, and they have nothing to do with Hamas whatsoever. I mean, they support the Palestinian community; that is their nation, and you know, Hamas just happens to be the elected government. But as far as I know, there's no connection between them. And
So Debbie Schlussel writes. Last week, I told you that the Hamas front group and unindicted co-conspirator in Hamas terrorism, CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, was working overtime to insert itself into the violent CARE race riots in order to pimp Islam on inner city blacks. And of course, that's little I inner, little C city, capital B blacks. And I told you about the ISIS flags on the scene days before everyone else wrote about it. Now Hamas CARE wants you, and see, suddenly it's Hamas CARE, wants you and the rest of the world to know it is behind the violent race riots and looting that have been going on in Ferguson, Missouri for nearly 2 weeks.
Yeah, because she earlier has tried to tie the store that, the convenience store or bodega, as I would call it, that the Mike Brown and his friend were in, where he did not steal the cigarillos. He paid for them. You know, the family says this. The lawyer for the family says this. You know, they never filed a robbery complaint. They never called 911. They never said that there was any, you know, problem other than they had a disagreement because, you know, it looked wrong. And then it turned out that he paid for the stuff. So then they dropped it and went on about their lives. But she's trying to say now that the store owners, the people who actually own the business, are connected to funding Islamic terrorism.
Yeah, and yet at the same time, there is a realistic connection, if I understand correctly. Because I saw a press release from a couple of years ago where the Ferguson Police Department was the St. Louis County Police Department was ballyhooing the fact that their officers had gone on exchange training missions to Israel to learn from the Israeli police how to suppress civil unrest.
Not just officers. I mean, several of them did, but the police chief himself.
Yes.
You know, he was involved. This is the same one that's been lying to everybody ever since this started. Especially now that we understand that there's audio showing that there were 6 shots, a pause, and then 5 shots. You know, I mean, how much more do we need to explain that, you know, that this entire thing is being covered up? I mean, from what I'm understanding about this Darren Wilson, you know, now that he's been outed, actually, there's a whole movement now, right? We are Darren Wilson. You know, these sons of bitches have raised damn near $500,000 for this motherfucker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, they have. And the comments on the if you could find them. The comments on the on the crowdfunding page are just precious. But I got another one here. Let's see. One pro Darren Wilson protester. Wesley Lowry on Twitter reported at one point, and this is back during the police riot. Wesley Lowry tweeted at one point tonight, Michael Brown protesters chanted, hands up, don't shoot. Darren Wilson supporters responded, shoot, shoot, shoot.
Oh, yeah. They're calling it a good kill.
Yeah, well, that was the other thing. Yeah, this is, that's another statement that's been made. One Darren Wilson supporter said, we'll all see this in the end, that it was a good shooting. You know, it was a good kill.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, I mean, if you look at the comments and their screenshots, you know, I mean, this is the internet, all right? you know, you put stuff out there, somebody's going to log on to it. And, you know, these folks are saying, here's my $10. And now, if you look at the donations, it's like $5, $10, $15, $20. These people don't have any money. But they're willing to contribute. They're nickels and dimes. And to leave a note, I always support animal control. I'm willing to, you know, to supply the next magazine for the next cop that's willing to go this far, or, you know, like words to that effect. You know, someone needs to get, you know, take out the trash. Someone needs to get rid of the gorillas. And then at the same time, these yahoos want to come to me on Twitter and say, well, we're not racist. You are. And it's like, fuck you, you know, but then there's no point in actually getting into an argument with a numbskull like that. You just go ahead and you point out.
When I read that it was a good kill line angry, you know what the first thing I thought of? The right winger who, in the wake of the murder of Trayvon Martin, said, nice shooting, Zim.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, he's still being congratulated. Look, George Zimmerman is laughing his ass off right now. You know, he's running around, he's driving around, you know, he's beating up on his girlfriends, he's pulling weapons on them, he's threatening people, you know, and he's going to be able to do this because he's a symbol of what these cats want. And see, and this is what fascism looks like. People really need, in the United States anyway, really need to get it out of their head that fascism looks exactly like Mussolini and Hitler, and most people don't even think about Franco. You know, very militaristic, and everybody's wearing a uniform, and, you know, they all got tight haircuts, and the women stay home.
No, in the early days of Mussolini's fascism, he just had armed gangs of thugs.
That's all.
In fact, there's one Hemingway short story where he writes about being broken down or a flat tire or something on some Italian road, and the fascisti, come along. And it looked a hell of a lot more like Golden Dawn than it did Third Reich.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, remember, Mussolini was the first. He set the model. You know, he took what he saw in terms of organization, in terms of socialism, because he was raised as a socialist. I mean, come on, Benito, he was named after a Mexican revolution.
Yeah.
You know, you know, I mean, he took socialism and stretched it. You know, he removed all of the people think Marx created socialism. That's not true. He refined it in many ways. But, you know, he took those organizational elements, the same thing that Hitler did. I mean, they called themselves the Working Man's Party, even though they were being completely supported by upper-level capitalists. But they used the thugs on the street. And when you look at this Darren Wilson, I'm sorry, but if he's the master race, I mean... You know, if this is supposed to be the example of, well, actually, how can I put this without trying to sound really prejudiced? And I'm not talking about racially prejudiced. I mean, just to look at somebody and say, oh, yeah, well, he looks kind of dumpy and stupid looking. And, you know, so that just shows something that was really stupid. But, you know, we do this and we make a lot of these snap judgments. And it's like, when I look at the people who are leaving these comments, when you follow their Facebook things, and they have these really ugly, you know, web pages, and they have the most vile comments, and you look at their activities, they're into guns, they all go to church, or they say they go to church, and they have all these Bible quotes, and they talk about how they're against abortion, and they support life, but they're pro-death penalty, and the tired of black people are asking for handouts, and why can't Mexicans go back to... Yeah. Why can't, you know, Mexicans go back to their own country? And we get caught up in trying to argue with them on that level. Instead of really pointing out, the one with the problem is you. If you feel the need to go into a goddamn convenience store with a gun and then shoot off your own goddamn privates, who's the punk here? Who's the idiot? Who's the one that's really goddamn afraid? Those cops are scared of us. If they have to come out with all of that goddamn equipment... And who's
For the most part, in this violent, violent, violent world, people of color in this country, angry, walk around every day without so much as a pop gun.
Yeah, but that's
and
not.
And yet it's the white folks who are terrified.
Yeah. But the thing is, they use that as the excuse that, you know, the violent weapon, the violent encounter. they use that as an excuse. And I'm saying this as somebody who's been an Uncle Tom, okay, most of his adult life, right? I started out very political. You know, I was raised by, you know, black conservatives, okay? I was raised by Eisenhower Democrats. But the rest of my extended family were very Afrocentric. You know, like I said, most of them are in the Nation of Islam. So, you know, I went through this full circle of saying, okay, well, you know, I'm not really treated too well here, and white people don't beat up on me the way I was treated in my neighborhood. You know, there's a lot of reasons why people taunt. But when you hang around white people to the point where I have, being of color, and you're there at their funerals, you're there when people are passing away, you're there when, you know, people, you know, children are being born, you're there with them at their important moments, and they consider you in, for the most part. You hear a lot of things that the average black person does not hear, that, you know, these folks may not say in front of people of color or near a microphone, you know, if they can avoid it. But I've heard a whole lot of things, and then that usual, well, I didn't mean you, or I didn't mean anything by it, right? They yeah. use that whole gun thing as an excuse, because when you have that rationale, then it's justified then to have an unarmed big black man as that punk ass motherfucking Ben Stein. And you can tell him I said, Ben Stein is a fucking punk.
Oh, that's where it was. Yeah, let me find that. Yeah, he's the one that said Michael Brown wasn't unarmed. He was armed with his incredibly strong, scary self.
Well, see, I've been in situations like that where I've, you know, fucking have gotten into something. I give you this scenario. Well, one of them anyway. I was with this chick that looked like Heidi Klum. It was like our second date, you know, and we just happened to go out, and this was in a major city. And the fucking hate that I got from the moment I came into the door, from when we...
Oh, I can imagine.
What is she doing with him? What the fuck is this? And it wasn't just the jock types. I'm talking about, you know, we went up to a place where people had suits on. And, you know, they were just completely fucking rude. You know, it's not what, you know, they think that we actually have weapons on. And like I said, these things are excuses. You know, they are just afraid of us, period. Our presence is what frightens them. It's not that,
you know. You just sent my mind casting backwards. A lot of people don't know that the brilliant Mel Brooks movie, Blazing Saddles, was actually written in large part by Richard Pryor.
Well, yeah, but are you talking about a different time frame where people understood where that kind of satire was going? You know, laughing.
Yeah, but the thing is, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's tucked into a comic western that is actually social commentary on the present.
Oh yeah.
And there's the one scene where the well dressed little old lady, just, you know, brimming with moral rectitude, sees Sheriff Bart on the street and says, I apologize about the up yours, but you will have the common decency not to speak to me on the street. And yeah, that's when she hands him the pie through the jail window. Mm. So, yeah, people, well-dressed people, and that's immediately what I thought of. Yeah, well-dressed people behaving in otherwise barbaric fashion.
Well, look, William Jennings Bryan, who should be admired, you know, for, you know, his anti-imperialism stance, and Mark Twain for that same matter, right? Should be admired for their anti-colonialism, anti-imperialism stances. But Mark Twain and William Jennings Bryan were both bigots. And William Jennings Bryan, for example, when he was in Haiti, he remarked, oh my, niggas speaking French.
Jesus. I think Mr. Clemens was, and maybe it's just because he's a hero of mine, was a little bit less so, because his dispatches from Hawaii and from other parts of the globe wherein he ran into communities of color were far more damning of white folks than they were the folks of color.
Oh no, I agree with you. But see, the thing is, if you read his travels around the equator, because I believe that's what you're
following the equator,
following the equator. You know, these are people that people in the United States really did not have a relationship to. His relationship to Africans was different. Now he will point out the social controversies, but at the same time, blacks were still blacks when it really came down to it. You know, he was no better or no worse than Thomas Jefferson was. You know, who was not the stupidest person in what became the United States, but still, you know, told his son, you're still my property, right? And your mother belongs to me. Matter of fact, all of you goddamn belong to me. And I'm only gonna, you know, favor you a little bit while we're in France, because it's goddamn embarrassing for these Frenchmen to ask me why I'm treating my own son like a slave. When somebody as smart as you would think you would treat him as an equal. I mean, he acts like your equal. And he told his son that too, that he had to really watch how the fuck he carried himself, because people are starting to really think that, you know, you're really above, you think that you're above your station. You know, but then you can contrast that with George Washington. His slave, I can't remember his name right now, was the most painted, most written about black man in the country, or what became the United States at that time, during the Revolutionary War and after. I mean, he was giving orders in the field on Washington's behalf. They drank together. They hawed together, you know. I mean, they did all of these things. But at the same time, he was still his slave. No matter what. You know, I mean, we're talking about somebody who died coming back from the slave quarters in the middle of the night, slipped and hit his head and never recovered. You know, I mean, this is just the reality of things. You know, the relationship that white people have with Africans within the United States is always going to be different psychologically than the relationship they have with people from, you know, someplace else. There are folks who respect Hinduism, and I don't know why, if they really understood it, you know, the social impacts of it, who respect Hinduism, but then will say that black people need to, you know, stop listening to rap because that's why what happened to Michael Brown happened.
Oh, God, I got to share something with you. This just occurred to me in the course of what you were saying, Angry. Mm. I read... And I don't know why I do this to myself. I read the most recent Maureen Dowd column.
Oh, she's back.
Oh, Jesus. In which she referred to President Obama as that son of Kansas and Africa.
Well, it's true. He's not as African. He's not an African American in the same way that I am. He has a totally different experience.
But the thing, why is it necessary, I guess the question, to make that reference?
Well,
the context in which she made the reference was, this was another one of her, scathing columns. I mean, the bitterness and the vitriol just steams off the page every time they publish one of her, nasty little screeds on the New York Times. But in this case, excoriating Barack Obama, claiming that he had, oh, what did she say? Basically that he had put Al Sharpton in charge of race relations in Ferguson instead of doing it himself. That he had abandoned race.
I mean, Maureen Dowd, you know, at this point, you know, who really gives a damn about the hell she said? I mean, somebody else said that Holder, Eric Holder, who defended United Fruit, who killed how many thousands of Indians in South America, they got off with a fine. Human rights violations. Murdered Native Americans in South America, right? They got off with a fine. This is Eric Holder. He was their lawyer. And, you know, they're sending him in. There's been no real move to really do anything. There's been no executive action to do anything. And when I say executive action, I'm talking about an executive order from the White House to do something. The way, Bush got up off his ass and left, where was he? In Crawford, Texas? Yeah, this is when the Crawford coward got up from his, vacation to sign that emergency legislation over Terry Schiavo. You know, that same case where, that other punk ass, Sean Hannity, was sitting outside and set up camp outside the hospital, where he brought a parade of half-assed doctors and people who sent their own letters to the Nobel Peace Prize goddamn committee to get themselves nominated. And there was a damn operation that was stopped by the authorities where they were going to kidnap this woman and take her to a safe location. You know, it sounds like I'm going on a tangent and it's unrelated, but it isn't. This is the mentality that we're dealing with. But what I'm saying is the mentality has always been there because
I'm still trying to sort out 2 days later, Angry, what Andrea Tanteros meant.
Was trying to say, yeah.
you know, Eric Holder runs the DOJ like the Black Panthers.
Like the Black Panthers. And it's like, what the fuck is that? You know, well, first off, she didn't say the Black Panthers, not the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. See, she said specifically the new Black Panthers.
No, no, no. She said like the Black Panthers.
Oh, well, see, I got the information wrong. So she said the Black Panthers. But that caused even more goddamn confusion, because if the Black Panthers ran it, I can already tell you what would have happened. If the original Black Panthers had been anything, had still been around, they would have filed an international complaint with the UN. You understand what I'm saying? They would have filed international complaints with every consulate that they could have gotten a hold of, and would have said that they were under military occupation. All right? And that they needed and demanded intervention from the international community. Do you see that coming from the Holder department?
Yeah, see, that's, well, and they're, I mean, they operated to a certain extent under democratic principles, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know, consensus and all that, all that good stuff.
Yeah. All the best of the left, you know. And, but that's definitely what they would have done. They would have taken this to the international level immediately. Immediately. Not to say that they wouldn't have dealt with the state and federal authorities and local authorities. Of course they would have. But they would immediately have brought that up, especially when you find out that the same tear gas canisters are being used in the Gaza, are being used in Ferguson, Missouri. No, see, you know, to equate the Obama administration with socialism and Marxism is fucking insanity. To associate Eric Holder and any of these other Negroes that are working with the Obama administration, No. There is nothing radical about this. They should be happy that Obama is president. They should be happy that it's not somebody, right, who really, you know, whose family has felt the sting in the lash, and somebody who's been stopped for absolutely no fucking reason, as I have, you know. I mean, this happened to me going to work, on dates, you know, this shopping, you know, how much money do you have on you? Where are you going? Where do you live? And then when I had moved to white neighborhoods to try to get away from that kind of thing, what are you doing here? You don't deserve to be here, you know. And like I said on my last show, I don't wear sneakers. I don't even wear jeans really very much. I look like Don Lemon. You dig what I'm saying?
Oh, God.
You know.
Yeah, I just got a note in from Ray. He said, speaking of the Panthers, Gun Nuts sure didn't like those guys bearing arms.
No, and see, and that's the other goddamn thing. And since I'm on your show and we're heard in Appalachia, I'll say this to these Gun Nuts that listen to this show. Hey, man, you know, you want to find out what's being said on the left and so on, so you can go on your little petty websites and say whatever? Hey, where were you punks when it comes to the Constitution when it came to Ferguson? You were fucking nowhere.
Well, that's, you know, and that's one of the, things that Carol pointed out last night. No Gadsden flags, no tricorn hats.
Not one.
But, no muskets.
But,
no,
but some white supremacists, though, came to show up and say that they were Darren Wilson.
Yeah.
You know, see, they'll come up. And I really wish that they would just come out. I really wish that the GOP would just come out and say what it's about. I wish that Rand Paul would stop lying and saying that he gives a damn about black folks. And that, you know.
Oh, bless his little punkin' head. Did you see that he took his wild ophthalmologic skills down to Guatemala?
To do what? To help them with the people who have been sterilized by this government that they just apologized for not too long ago? Did he go down there to talk about that as a medical professional?
Oh, no.
Did he talk about genocide?
He went down there to put drops in eyes and be a libertarian ophthalmologist.
Yeah, but he had to go to a Spanish-speaking country where you have all of these immigrants coming. Yeah, he's doing the same thing the Bush family did. They sent their brown relative, his nephew, down to Mexico to campaign for him. I didn't even know that was legal. You know,
Jesus.
I didn't even know that they could accept foreign, you know, donations. How the hell is that possible? How the hell is that possible? And why doesn't the public know this?
Well, we know why the public doesn't know it. Jeremy in Vermont just pointed out something angry. He said, you know, the right wing has always been terrified of rap, gangsta, rap, R&B. Which I find funny, since one of the most prolific rappers of all time, Tupac, said himself, there isn't a white man alive that would trade places with me, and I'm rich.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just had a TV producer, black, right? What happened to him? What happened to him?
That was Suge, right?
No. Suge got shot at a party for Chris Brown. You know, this was a TV producer. I don't know where he's working.
Oh, no. Are you talking about Chris, Charles Belk in Beverly Hills?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, man, you know, take some other calls, but you know, I'm going to tell you, no matter what we say here, you know, in terms of preaching to the choir, they already know this. I mean, you had an excellent guest on last night. She explained it, you know, and I'm going to say it like this from a white person's perspective. I think pretty, you know, articulately, and she did it with, you know, a sense of compassion. Okay.
Well, but more than anything else, respect.
Respect.
The because question the, is, the most impressive part of that, and it's what you didn't see on CNN, for instance, and God knows not on Fox. The most impressive part of what Carol had to say, within the four corners of the brilliant piece of writing that she did, was to point out the profound power of listening, not talking. Now here's what you people need to do, you people. No, go and listen. And that's what the CNNs of the world are incapable of doing, and the Foxes. You know,
their job isn't to listen. Their job is to articulate the new reality, the known unknown.
Bless his heart, though. Chris Hayes did go there, and he listened. You know, they tried to get people to talk about what was happening instead of standing there and pontificating about what was happening.
Well, he was trying to be a reporter, and they tried their best to stop him from doing that. So I'm going to go, man. But look, you know, please, people, support this show as much as you possibly can. Keep Bob on the air. You know, you're not going to hear this talk anywhere else. And that's the problem. You know, take care of yourself, my man. Peace.
Thank you, Angry. Have a good night. Thanks for all you said and all your help. I appreciate it. Bye now.
Bye.
Buddy the Angry Indian. AngryIndian.blogspot.com, I do believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. In a chat message. I'm kind of. I talk with Angry, and I just kind of feel like I've been. I'm left kind of dumbstruck. Angry brings the A game every time. And he's right. We've got $35 remaining this evening. $35 remaining in Steve's Prayer Meet and Wednesday challenge. Remember, he's going to double everything that comes in up to $50. And so there's $35 remaining. Hopefully that will happen in the next 33 minutes or so. I want to go back to the Arizona story because Jan and Jerry went out looking around and they found the website for Bullets and Burgers, because I'm still kind of stymied by that too. Helicopter flights to our range and the Grand Canyon. Shoot it. Burgers and Bullets, Las Vegas ATVs, shoot a 50 cal, ride an ATV. Jeremy noting, by the way, I love Angry. Yeah, Angry gets fan mail every time he's in the program. Shoot a Barrett 50 cal. Rambo 2's M60. Terminator Spas 12. Shoot at our outdoor desert range. Yeah, really. The Bullets and Burgers Adventure is a private outdoor range set in a stunning outdoor desert landscape. We separate ourselves from all other Las Vegas ranges, because I guess there's a bunch.
You are listening to Aboriginal Press News Service Public Radio. Indigenous talk radio for Celtic Scotland and other people living in the Fourth World.
The
दोपहर को कहाँ गई थी?
दोपहर को बाजार गई थी।
पता की नहीं जा सकती थी?
अरे अभी इसमें क्या बताना?
पड़ोसियों से पता चलता है मुझे।
पता चले तो क्या हुआ?
चुप! ये घर मैं चलाता हूँ, मुझसे पूछे बगैर कोई काम नहीं होगा इस घर में। चल चला समझ।
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको। बेल बजाओ। घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें। ब्रेक थ्रू की पहल।
They have been cheated out of justice just as I have. They deserve justice more than anyone deserves justice. Because of Amnesty's assistance as well as Arnold and Porter, you know, I'm still sitting here alive today being able to have a conversation. And I want to thank all Amnesty supporters, you know, all the volunteer workers. I want to thank everyone all over the world, you know, who has been praying for me, supporting me, writing letters and signing petitions and things like that. I want to encourage you to continue to sign the amnesty petitions, continue to write letters, and look into my situation, because this situation could have happened to anyone, but it needs to start with me. They need to continue to let their voice be heard, because if their voice had not been heard thus far, the parole board probably would have went ahead and let me be executed. You know, my faith in God all these years has kept me strong. Because in any other situation, had I not had God in my life and a strong family support base, you know, I would have been giving up. You know, there's a couple of guys back here that are dropping their appeals and saying, you know, they'd rather go ahead and be executed than spend the rest of their life in prison. And with me, because I have faith that God will eventually intervene and set things right, you know, it kept me strong. It gave me hope. You should never be able to convict a man or even indict a person, man or woman, without any physical evidence, no whatsoever. I would never take another human being's life. And this killer is still out there. My family's in mourning, the victim's family's in mourning, and the truth is still locked in because I didn't get justice. But in DNA cases, you know, that's the physical evidence that you can test. I have no physical evidence to test to prove my innocence. But when these witnesses volunteered to come forth because their conscience was bothering them about the lies that they told on me, when they came forth and signed these affidavits, then that was evidence for me to test. When they took me to that death cell for death watch 24 hours before the execution, you know, it really affected me and everybody on death row, because you had grown men crying because they've heard about my situation. They know him, and they was like, they said, if I couldn't get no justice, nobody could get justice.
There are many arguments against the death penalty. It's not a deterrent against the crimes that it punishes. Society who use the death penalty don't have lower crime rates than those that do. When a country abolishes the death penalty, they are not plunged into criminal chaos. But even if the death penalty did reduce crime rates, would it then be acceptable? The death penalty targets the economically disadvantaged, those who can't afford good legal counsel, those without a voice in society. There's a saying in the US, capital punishment means that those without the capital get the punishment. Statistics show this is true. But would it be acceptable if people from all sections of society were executed? Does killing a rich man make killing a poor man right? The death penalty is irreversible and results in the death of innocence. When someone is dead, a retrospective pardon is of little use to them or their family. Since 1990, in China, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, and the USA, there have been 51 recorded executions of child offenders, some as young as 14 years old. But even if no more innocents or children are killed, should we tolerate the death penalty? The death penalty is never acceptable. It abuses two of our most basic human rights. Everyone has the right to live, and no one shall be subject to torture. The death penalty obviously kills people, but it also tortures, physically by the brutal nature of execution, and psychologically by forcing individuals to wait to be killed. They wait, sometimes for decades, while others are led to their deaths. The horror of this waiting is unimaginable. Human rights are thus called because they apply to all human beings. They belong to all of us equally. An attack on these fundamental rights anywhere is an attack against all of us. The right to life is inalienable. It cannot be given, and it cannot be taken away. No matter how terrible the crime, in a world full of uncertainty, human rights are a clearly drawn line, a line between what is right and what is wrong, the line between imprisonment and execution. Every individual facing the death penalty is, whatever they stand accused of, still a human being. However much we revile them, however much we are outraged by their actions, however much we want revenge, they are still human beings. They may well have killed and tortured. They've crossed the line. But do we really want to join them?
This is Radio Anguindian. Anguindian Radio for the Fourth World.